Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Today we have a special episode with Roger Longden. Roger and I have known each other for quite a number of years. There's a bit of a story behind how we met and how we got to do work together, but that's a little bit later in the podcast. Roger, welcome to our podcast series. It's great to have you on. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure, sir. Great to be here. Thank you for the invitation. So, yes, indeed, we have known each other for a number of years now. And I run a consultancy based here in the UK called There Be Giants, which is something of a rather abstract name. And it always usually elicits the question, what's that about then? Well, we focus on it helping to improve the overall performance of organizations, but we do it in a specific way. And we do that by helping them to become more adaptive, more agile, dare I say, certainly more responsive by increasing the really important practices like collaboration, transparency, accountability. And whilst that might not sound like rocket science, it's the way in which we approach it. So we use a methodology called OKRs, our own version of the OKR methodology, and wrap that together with work on culture, work on behaviors blended with technology to deliver some real step changes in performance for our clients.
That's fantastic. So just a little bit of a going back in history, I guess, Roger, when we've met for the first time and we've had this discussion about what do you guys and why focus on OKRs, this was really at a time when we started our own journey towards internationalizing our business and starting to look kind of broader afield. And I remember one of the conversations we've had was around, so what is common to organizations around the world? What are some of the common challenges? Some of them are fairly messy challenges organizations they deal with. And one of the areas we kind of landed on was around setting objectives, focusing the teams, getting everyone to kind of really infuse themselves with why are we really, really here and how do we remove all the other noise away from this? And you've suggested that I hop on a plane and visit you guys and we then attended a conference together. And I was really impressed in the way you were generous in sharing from your knowledge and, you know, the kind of the relationship and the collaboration between our organization has just grown from there.
So it has. Yeah. Likewise. Yeah, and you're right. You know, there are challenges around the delivery of, you know, how organizations set their goals. And it may not sound like, again, like rocket science, but I think what you have to bear in mind is the way that the context in which that goal setting is now done is vastly different to how it was even as little as 5 years ago, let alone 10, 15, 20 years ago. And the thing is that goal setting as a discipline, as a skill, has not really evolved. You know, many, many organizations have been using goals on a 12-month basis, particularly at individual level. And that is, to be honest, neither use nor ornament in this day and age, because you can bet your bottom dollar that the 12-month objective is actually out of date, way out of date by the time you come to evaluate performance against it. So that then leads to a sense of unfairness that someone or a team is being evaluated against something which actually just bears no resemblance to reality now. So the whole process is needed to become more iterative, more adaptive, and reflect the pace of which business is now operating at. And yeah, that's the thing that we're really, really focused on helping in some respects our larger clients turn around to us and say, can you help us be less corporate?
Yeah. And when you think through this, and you're absolutely right. I mean, in many respects, as much as strategy and strategy execution more specifically has been touted around and mentioned frequently, the level of innovation around it has decreased significantly in recent years. And as a result of it, we end up with tools that were designed for a much more stable world, for a 20th century, kind of starting from the scientific management principles, right up to balanced scorecards, and a lot in between. that actually doesn't fit the world as we see it now. So the problem is not no longer how do we, in a narrow sense, are able to measure strategy execution, you know, once everything else has been done and stays equal or constant. It's how do we do it in a way that is adaptive, where the strategy itself, the way it gets executed, the strategic choices that we make continuously evolve, and they do so in parallel. So what we are helping through the use of OKRs and similar methods to do is to be able to really help organizations focus, be able to execute not what is a static strategy, but what is continuously evolving, where the learning in itself is exponential. And that's become a problem with organizations and individual leaders, right? Not just from a CEO's perspective, but for the head of HR, for the head of supply chain, for the head of new markets, for the head of corporate portfolios, and yes, also for the strategy head. So that's been fascinating to watch and a privilege to be able to work with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And you know, there are also other pressures, I think, which have encouraged this evolution in the discipline of goal setting, such as, you know, all the data out there tells us that the new generations that are joining the workforce are not necessarily motivated by the same things that, you know, the older generations were. And to them, purpose is really important. So particularly in large organizations, and having worked in those myself, in leadership capacities, I know that this is a challenge. You really have to work hard to help your team or your teams really understand the value of their contribution, because it's very easy to feel like a little cog in a very large machine. And if you're using something like OKRs, which are aligned, which are designed to instill a sense of purpose in the people that are working to them, then that can make a big, big difference. That's a really important lever, which I think be used to really powerful effect by managers and leaders these days. Definitely. Yeah.
So let's dive in a bit, Roger, here, and let's talk about, in a sense, the real problem. The problem that's present mostly today with measuring, I'll call it measuring strategy, not just the execution part, but measuring strategy and its impact on the organization and the bigger ecosystem that it's in. What's essentially the problem that we see?
So I'm going to come up with a couple of suggestions here. The first I have briefly touched on, which is, you know, the measurement or the defining or the definition of the goals, and then consequentially the measurement of the goals, needs to keep up with the pace of the business. Okay, there's no point in measuring a goal which is out of date. And this is where it's not just about measuring, it's also about learning and adapting. So the measuring of execution shouldn't just be about what's achieved. You know, you should be bringing in early warning measures, if you will, and starting to track confidence as well, which if you do that and you start to build up good, reliable confidence data, that can actually help improve your agility, because you can start to forward plan with confidence. You don't have to wait until the end of the period to start planning the next period, for instance. So, you know, traditional ways of measuring strategy and what's been achieved against it has almost been quite reactive. Now I think you can get a lot more proactive. And I think technology helps with this, because, you know, you do it on a good software platform that everybody's got access to, that's easy to use, that is very, very low in terms of the effort that's required. It still does, just because it's low effort doesn't mean that it can't still capture and track good quality data around your goal performance. And also the other thing as well is, I mean, in traditionally the measures of the success of a strategy has often been pretty much financial. Now, they will always have their place. Financial measures will always have their place, and that's absolutely appropriate. But now we're seeing expectations from all sorts of different stakeholders, whether they be investors, whether they be governments, or whether they be, in fact, the workforce themselves, who are expecting to see that the organization that they work for is having an impact on things like diversity inclusion, is having an impact on things like the environment and the social impact of the organization. And I'm sorry, but no matter how good your profit and loss and your balance sheet are, they don't do anything to track how well you're executing against perhaps the priorities that you might have around diversity and inclusion, for instance. And so you need a goal setting approach, which is flexible and adaptive enough to be able to measure whatever type, but whatever nature that goal may have.
Absolutely. Now, Roger, when we start seeing this in practice, a couple of things start to happen. And that for me is where the magic of this approach really comes in. The first thing I saw that happens is that, into your earlier point, particularly around the newer generation, is as we go through the process of defining objectives and setting measures and deciding how we're going to measure and track those, very often a different and more strategic conversation emerges. We're no longer speaking about the measure. We're speaking about the impact of the measure. We're speaking about societal outcomes.
Yeah.
And we're speaking about how would other stakeholders view this particular measure? Would they, if they had to participate in this discussion, would they give the same credence to this particular measure? Or is this something that we're simply used to measuring, probably financial in nature, required by the accounting profession in some cases, et cetera, et cetera? So for me, there's been a really big shift in our willingness and our ability to involve others, not necessarily strategy professionals, operations people, people from various disciplines, in out of their discipline conversations, in a very strategic conversation that ultimately results in, here's a much smarter set of measures to see whether our strategy in essence is being executed and executed well, and taking cognizance of the others in the ecosystem. So it's kind of the first thing that comes up. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, very, very much so, because, and it just takes me back to a conversation I was having with a client only just a couple of hours ago, where they'd drawn up some 12-month key results, which obviously those being 12 months, they are at business level. So these are pretty strategic, or they should be, but they were still very action orientated. Mm. All right. They were referring to big pieces of work. I think this is the one that springs to mind, was about implementing Salesforce. Mm. But I said, this is where we have to play the role of critical friend sometimes. And I said, well, imagine you implement Salesforce. I've then got to ask the question, so what? What's the evidence that you'll see to tell you that that's been successful? What is going to change from how things are now to how things will be in 12 months' time? Mm. What is it you're going to have then that you haven't got now? And so therefore, the right key result for that is something around some sort of metric around the amount of deals which are tracked through there, or the value of business that's closed through there, or the amount of usage of it. You could put all that effort in, have the system in place, and nobody decide to use it. In which case, that's just not having an impact. So you're absolutely right that the key results, which are obviously the measurable part of OKRs, that is, we really, really challenge our clients to come up with true measures of impact and outcome, not measures of activity.
And I guess, Roger, with that, the conversation with other stakeholders becomes easier. It is both more strategic, and it's also very often, I find, more aligned, because we're not looking at it through our internal and their internal measurements. We're looking at measurements that potentially are shared, potentially are more aligned in terms of their intent and the outcome that we want to create out there, rather than here's what's on my scorecard and here's what's on yours. So perhaps a word or two on that. Have you seen that in your work as well?
Yes. Yeah. To a certain extent, we see a lot more sharing, because in our methodology, we try to encourage, certainly once the organizational level OKRs have been set, at the next level down, instead of saying, what can each function do? What can sales do? What can marketing do? What can operations and finance do? And so on. And inadvertently, reinforcing all the silos, what we say is, what are the projects or initiatives or whatever term you want to use? What ideas do we have for what can move the needle on these 12-month OKRs over the next 3 months, irrespective of functional boundaries?
Yes.
And you come up with those ideas, and then you ask, where do we need the contributors to come from to form the team or the squad or whatever you want to call them, that's going to, that the group of people that's going to come together and that's going to focus on this OKR. Mm. And that's where you then say, right, well, actually we need, you know, we need somebody from product, we need somebody from marketing, we need somebody from customer success, bring them together. And they become, and you know, this is for any listeners out there who are familiar with how things work around, around software, and the development of software and software businesses in general, you'll probably hear some similarities, because this is how a lot of defined agile practice works in that space. And in many ways, I've always described OKRs as kind of taking the principles of agile and applying them to the wider business, not just how you develop and sell your technology. So yeah, we really, really try to encourage clients to develop the OKRs without being confined by functional boundaries. So what we don't want, once they've built their goal structure, we don't want it looking like a, you know, like the hierarchical organizational chart. We actually want it looking more like a network rather than a hierarchy, to be perfectly honest.
When you started the conversation, you spoke about a very important word here that you're already kind of, I guess, expanding on now, which is, OKRs are a great way of both testing and starting to shift the culture.
Yeah. Right?
Because now suddenly it's work that's inherently cross-functional. It requires people to think and act outside of their day jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that I've noticed when people start to do that is they end up completing the story. You start off with a kind of an initial set of what we think the objectives are, what the measures are, and then people go out and complete the story. They fill the content. They become more creative, and they're able, outside of their kind of functional silo, to create something that's even better and more collaborative, of higher quality than they could have in their own silo, very often what are predetermined measures in an old measurement system. So perhaps from a cultural perspective, when in those implementations, what do you see the most that has impressed you?
I usually see, as a result of what I just mentioned a moment ago about the groups coming together from, you know, being comprised of a number of different functions, I usually see a significant improvement in communication and collaboration. And it breaks down the them and us that can often develop. And, you know, the point that you make there about the testing, that is something that we really, really encourage clients to do, is to take the view that, you know, each objective should be thought of as a hypothesis. You know, we try, if we do this, we believe we're going to get that, and whatever that is defined in the key results. And what we tend to find is that you can start off with seeing pockets of that, but it's often quite a shift for all OKRs to be structured in that way. Mm-hmm. Because the minute you start thinking of OKRs as a test, you have to be prepared for them to fail. That can be quite scary for some organizations in general, or for some pockets of people, teams, whatever, in organizations, because of the way that failure has been managed and handled in the past. And this is where I think it pays to maybe distinguish between different types of failure. You've got what I would call intelligent failure, which is what we're talking about here, which is where failure happens in a controlled way, in a controlled environment. It's contained. Obviously, it's not putting the business at risk. But that you, as a result of that failure, definitely learn and adapt the next time round. And obviously, OKRs are cyclical, so there's always a next time round. And that, I would argue, until my last breath, is absolutely an example of high performance. You know, that's how you start to see things. That's how you start to see innovation happen. And many people have this this perception around innovation that it's only something that cool tech companies could do. It isn't. It isn't at all. You know, any one of us are capable of having an idea. And if you're given the permission and the means and the resources and the wherewithal to perhaps use an OKR to test it, then that is how you harness innovation. Booking.com do this very, very well. Very, very well. They actually have a whole toolkit which is available to an OKR toolkit, which is available to everyone in the organization. And if they come up with an idea, they can put together an OKR to test it out. And they're always trying new things. I mean, you can go to the landing page of booking.com and 1 minute, and then go back the second minute, and it will be different because they're constantly testing different things. And I mean, that's a great, you know, digital environments are absolutely ripe for that type of experimentation. But experimentation can be used as a practice in many, many different areas of the business, not just technology.
Well, I can even speak, Roger, from my own experience in this, because we've implemented OKRs in our own business. We have to practice what we preach, and I think it's been invaluable in terms of the lessons and the kind of nuance that one could bring into client environments. And I must say, I remember the first time when I published our objectives and key results to the broader team. It goes out to about 80 or so individuals. I didn't expect all 80 to read it within a day, but it was actually quite a daunting process. It was a process where one had to think about, you know, am I, for example, sharing too much? Am I, for example, dictating perhaps untoward, you know, unintentionally? Am I dictating the approach? Am I constraining the team? What would happen, for example, if I fail in some of the things that I've committed to doing and together with my team? So all these thoughts kind of run through your mind. And I remember, I think I kind of refined and polished those OKRs probably on at least 3 or 4 different versions. I kind of went, the only way it's going to work is for me to just publish them. And it went on Slack. Everyone saw it. And I must say that the responses I got were incredible, both in terms of the level of understanding. Suddenly people saw the nuances. Suddenly the level of contribution people could then add to it. They could build because they could see the texture. They could see the richness of it. They could see, oh, I understand why you were harping about this or that, or how these two seemingly disparate areas of our business actually are very much connected. So it is, to your earlier point, as effective a bi-directional communication tool as it was a strategic thinking tool.
Yeah, exactly. That is, you're spot on there, Sar. There is almost a social aspect, I would say, or a social requirement, but for OKRs to be successful. And I've heard the concept of socializing strategy be mentioned. I'm not sure who harnessed it, but it's an interesting one, I think, because I think that's exactly what OKRs can help to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the value of OKRs is in the conversations which they encourage, because you can have the most perfectly formed, most perfectly written set of OKRs, but if all you do is set them at the beginning of the period and then nobody looks at them or discusses them until the end, then they're not really worth the paper they're written on. You know, it's those regular conversations, it's those regular check-ins, it's those regular touch points. So this comes back to, you know, the point that we talked about at the start of the conversation about how rapidly business moves at now, and the pace at which business moves at nowadays, because that means that there's always 101 things for each and every person to be focusing on at each and every moment. And so there's so much noise, there's so much distraction that can pull us away from the priorities. And so what you need is regular touch points with those priorities, in other words, talking about the OKRs, to just nudge us back on track. And this is where we see the power of having team-level OKRs, which can still have individual accountability. And I won't go into detail how, but you can still design them so that, you know, individuals are still accountable, even though you're working towards a shared goal. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really powerful. it's really, really powerful. And that definitely, you know, that definitely gets that social aspect working to the advantage of everyone. I think this is a genuine, there's a genuine win-win in it for everyone. Because I see the business benefit because they see an increase in performance. I see people and teams benefit because they are able to achieve more. They're not fighting. They're not hitting up against, you know, those silo brick walls like they have been in the past. They're also feeling again, like I said earlier, that sense of purpose. They're starting to feel like they can actually make a difference.
Hmm. So for the benefit of our audiences, maybe kind of take us through the mechanics, but the process. So how are OKRs really different to traditional strategy measurement or strategy execution measurement more specifically? What are kind of the distinguishing features that make it different? Because we spoke a lot about the benefits of it. We spoke a lot about the experiences of organizations that we have worked with. Perhaps a better understanding of the process and how that's different.
Sure. So I would always advocate that there needs to be, it starts at the top, but that doesn't mean to say that it's dictated. I personally have a hatred of the term cascade because that to me implies that something's defined and then it's just imposed. It just flows through the organization and it's imposed on people as it flows downwards. But however, I do believe that it's leadership's job to set the direction and set the parameters in which we will travel towards that destination, you know, the boundaries of the playing field, if you will. But then it's over to those that are actually closer to the work, those that are closer to the measures, those that are closer to the challenges, to say, to answer the key question, how do we do this? And how will we know that we've been successful in doing it? Hmm. And that's where you start to get the bottom up. And that's where you start to get the ideas. That's where you know, executives are probably not going to have a great deal of insight into all the different ideas that you could have to make a customer success process more efficient and deliver better. But, you know, they're not going to have that. They will be working at too high a level to understand the details. So you need to have those experts, those key contributors involved in the process to be able to form really good, meaningful objectives and key results.
Mm.
And then where I believe that they also differ is because traditionally, you know, any sort of goal setting methodology usually just finishes at that point. Right, you set your goals. Fine. That doesn't change things. You set your goals. Well, whoop-de-doo. OKRs, like I said, is all about the value, making sure you get value from the conversation. So it's about bringing together the group of people that are contributing towards that OKR on a regular basis. Some of our clients choose to do it weekly. Some of them choose to do it fortnightly. I would never go beyond fortnightly because then things, you know, like I said, the noise starts to distract and pull people off course, you know, and fortnightly things, anything more than fortnightly and things start to drift. But you get people together for that regular check-in conversation that doesn't have to be a long conversation. Really good ones last for half an hour, tops. But because data is recorded in advance about progress and about confidence. And so when you get together, all you need to do is use that data to run the conversation, to start off with the things that are low confidence, then look at, things that are showing high confidence, but low progress and so on and so forth. And any detailed in-depth conversation which needs to be had can be taken offline, but the important thing is that the team is together to check in against progress on those, and it can bring to light any potential blockers that could prevent us from hitting the key results by the end of the quarter. So at least you've got a fighting chance about doing something about those rather than waiting till the end of the quarter and finding out that you've missed, in which case it's too late.
Yeah, absolutely. I was kind of thinking the two words we should probably banish out of the dictionary. One is the cascade, which right, it has a very clear indication that something has been decided up there and it's going to be forced down into the organization. And I guess the second one that worries me is escalation. So suddenly we're now putting things into the lift to be moved up, beamed up the chain of command into somewhere up there to be able to solve for us. Yeah. And one of the best examples I could give for this and the power of OKRs and how we use them was as we went through our own OKR cadence, the team actually realized that one of the areas we should give more attention to, that we should reinvigorate in this post-COVID environment, is our vision. They became even more confident and saw opportunities beyond what we articulated the vision to be. And suddenly from a conversation that was around how well are we tracking against X or Y, it became, what if we could look at the vision in this fast evolving environment differently? And it's actually the OKR process that helped us to do that. So in fact, tomorrow we're all getting together for a facilitated exercise and to reshape, retest. And you'll probably see a new version of a manifesto coming up in the next few weeks that talks right. about our new vision. I have to give a lot of credit to the OKR process for that.
Fantastic. That's good to hear. That's good to hear.
Roger, as we kind of close off on the conversation, I know you and I have quite a bit of work together and we put teams together to work on some nice, messy challenges in various environments. And it's been absolutely great. And one of the things I guess that we share more than anything else is the professionalism that needs to go into the definition of objectives and the use of OKRs. And similarly, in our work around growth, transformation, growing beyond one's core business, the same amount of rigor and discipline and professionalism that needs to go into that. So with that, I mean, I just wanted to ask you any kind of impressions on the kind of areas of collaboration where we work together, and specifically perhaps mention a bit more about the work that you do around the academy and how do you bring professionalism into broader audiences? Because for me, it's certainly been an area that I'm incredibly proud of, that we were able to join in and were equally passionate about.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why we connect so strongly over this, is because we do share the same beliefs that, you know, there should be a degree of professionalism around this type of practice. Otherwise, I think it becomes minimized and isn't given the focus and the credence that it should be. And also, I'm kind of a hot topic for me, this, because, you know, anyone can set themselves up and claim to work with OKRs. And interestingly, the majority of prospects that we work with often come back to us and say, oh, that's interesting. Your approach is different to measure what matters. Well, yes, that's right. And some even tell us that a lot of consultants out there, just all they do is regurgitate measure what matters. And you know, I'm sorry, but that's not the Bible. There is no Bible. The point is that we actually have to help clients build their own Bible based upon the principles and practices. And what we're seeking to do is we are seeking to bring a degree of professionalism to the practice of OKRs. The first phase that we've started is by launching the OKR Coach Academy. And we're actually working with one of the universities here in the UK to get that certified at postgraduate level. So that gives you a sense as to the degree of challenge that the course contains. And what's coming along after that as well is the global OKR professionals community. So it's one thing, you know, training people on how to go forth and work with OKRs. It's then another thing to actually give them a home, you know, to provide them with a home where they can go and hang out and meet and socialize and with other people who share their passion for OKRs, but also learn from each other and also learn from specialist contributors that can provide additional developments and insight around associated topics, like, for instance, your good self on your approaches to developing strategy and such like. You know, so we're doing quite a lot to bring a degree of professionalism to the practice of OKRs, because I can see how without that it's going to it's either going to wither and die and be forgotten about, or it's going to end up being something which is left open to interpretation in many, many different ways, because it's got so many different There'll be so many different versions of it out there, to be honest.
Absolutely. Roger, it's always absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for making time for this and sharing from your experience, the way you and the team bring the wisdom and the practice of OKR to these broader audiences. Thank you again.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sar.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.